And in this corner, weighing in with his take on current events, the smarty of the party, the mighty mite from the right, the heavyweight of debate, the man who's in cahoots with the grassroots, the broadcaster master, Jimmy Sangenberger.
Saturday night is never all right for the third and final hour of the Jimmy Sangenberger Show because, well, it means we're less than an hour away from the end of this edition of the program, but never fear. We'll be back same time, same place next Saturday night for more engaging, intelligent talk, Sang style, right here on News Talk 710 KNUS. Great to be with you this evening, as always. And as always seems to be the case on a Saturday night, time is flying right on by. I cannot believe we are already in to the third hour of the show. Next Saturday night, our interviews with candidates will continue with Steve House, candidate for the 6th Congressional District on the Republican side. He's got something in particular that we will be discussing. You do not want to miss that as we have him in studio. And also, we got some big stuff. I'll be doing some big things coming up soon. Encourage you to log on to future.jimmysangenberger.com. That's future.jimmysangenberger.com. You can sign up there for a newsletter list and be the first to get any updates on things that are happening. Be sure to check that out. Of course, remember, it's all ease all the time in Sangenberger. All right, we are indeed in the third and final hour, but last but not least, that's the expression, last but not least, I am pleased to welcome for this full hour in studio, Republican candidate for the 18th Judicial District to, such as George Brockler, can never be replaced, replace George Brockler, who is term limited, John Kellner, a day one hire, by the way, of DA George Brockler. John, welcome.
Thanks for having me on, Jimmy. Appreciate it. You give me some time, especially in the last hour, and to talk about how I'm going to fill those big shoes of George Brockler.
I think you can do it. I really do. I've been getting to know you over the last several months, and I'm so glad you stepped in. You have a unique background and a background that I think makes you very capable of being the next district attorney for the 18th Judicial District, which includes Arapahoe, Douglas, Elbert, and Lincoln counties. I've got them memorized. Enough conversations with George gets them stuck in my head. Now, we will talk about maybe if there could be change up to the 18th Judicial District a little later. But let's dive into who the heck is John Kellner.
Well, I am a Marine veteran. I joined the Marine Corps back in 2003 after 9/11. I was a judge advocate, served on active duty, actually went to law school. The Marine Corps sent me to law school, of all things, in Boulder. Got my law degree, ended up on active duty, deployed overseas. And
thank you for your service.
I'm happy to do it. You know, I grew up in a Marine Corps family. My father served for about almost 30 years. And my brother as well, he's a Marine officer stationed at Pensacola. So it's just part of what we've always done. You know, it's a family tradition. It's all about service. But, you know, I met a guy at some point when I was in training. His name was George Brockler, and he was in the Army. He had come out to train us young prosecutors on how to, you know, be effective advocates as in these court martials. And so it's just a guy, obviously, that kept in touch with over the years. And so when I was transitioning out of the Marine Corps off active duty, you know, it's a man I kept in touch with. And so when his opportunity came up, when he won the election, he asked me to come in and help start the cold case unit for the 18th.
Cold case unit, what's that?
Yeah, so cold cases in the state of Colorado are pretty much any homicides that are over 3 years old. A case where, you know, all leads have been tracked down as much as you can, and we've just hit a roadblock or a dead end. So we keep track of these at a statewide level. I'm on a statewide review board for a cold case task force. And what we do in the 18th is we attack each of these cases. We open up old boxes. We go through the evidence. We organize things. And then we look for new witnesses or old witnesses that we might be able to reapproach and see if we can get some sort of angle to try and get back into this case, bring it back to life. And we've had a lot of success doing that.
So when it comes to the military background, what do you think that does in terms of, like, I think George Brockler, by all accounts, and you've worked for him since day one of his administration, has really run a very good ship, so to speak. Neither of you are from the Navy, of course, but nevertheless. The question is, how do you think the military equips you to be a leader in that role? Because it's a leadership position through and through, more than anything else, really.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, whether you're running for DA or no matter what you do, when you join the military, they're going to teach you leadership skills. And I can't speak for the other services, but I know, especially in the Marine Corps, the incredible emphasis on leadership training, how to motivate people to get the best out of them, how to think critically out of difficult situations, come up with a lot of different courses of action, and make decisions to then lead your people down the right path. I mean, it doesn't really matter, I think, what branch of service or what your job was when you were on active duty. Those are just basic core concepts that they instill in you.
Again, John Kellner's in studio. He's Republican candidate for the 18th Judicial District Attorney post that is up this 2020 cycle because George Brockler is term limited. So in the office, you have a couple of different roles that you've got. In addition to the cold case, you know, what else do you do?
So I actually am in charge of three of our four county offices. I am the office head for Douglas County, Elbert County, and Lincoln County. So a huge amount of ground to cover. Before I had taken over those three offices, I, as I mentioned earlier, ran the cold case unit, but also supervised one of our largest felony prosecution teams in Arapahoe County. So about 6 years experience working in the Arapahoe County courts as well.
So when we look at the experience and expertise that you have, what do you think makes you most apt for this position, especially in whatever general election environment we will face where you'll be up against others on the other side, Democratic candidate?
Yeah, I think the most important thing about this job is you got to have somebody that understands and truly respects the rule of law. Somebody with a good moral compass is going to make decisions based off the law and do what's right. You know, prosecutors sometimes get a bad rap that we're out there just to get wins, that you know, it's all about you know, getting something on a scorecard rather than actually doing the right thing. But my focus and the focus of the people that I work with has always been on seeking justice, doing the right thing. And that's what I'm going to do as the next DA.
Now, as you mentioned, John Kellner, you started the cold case unit for the 18th Judicial District, working with District Attorney Brockler. What inspired you to really take on that role? Because that seems like a pretty tricky position and also very intense.
Yeah, you know, it's funny how I think in most people's careers, you stumble into something at oftentimes, and then you just got to make the best of it. So when I was actually a DA in Boulder before I worked for DA Brockler and came out here to Arapahoe, I had the opportunity to work on a cold case, an old case from the early 90s involving a murder of a guy named Marty Grisham. And it was a really tough case that, you know, they took out of basically it had been in the waste bin practically. It hadn't been worked on in years, but some great detectives got to work on it. A couple of people from the Federal Bureau of Investigation as well. Everybody came together, had this great outcome. We ended up getting a first-degree murder conviction in that case, and it caught George's attention. And so when I think he saw that, he realized that we've got a couple hundred unsolved murders in our jurisdiction, and nobody is responsible for pushing those forward. And so he knew he needed to do something about that.
That is something, I mean, you don't think about that. And I know that there are other task forces that have been set up. They're pretty unique.
Yeah.
I was at a presentation with the Sex Trafficking Task Force. That is an epidemic in our society today. And George Brockler took a leadership role in helping to get that going, too.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And I mean, it's hard to conceptualize some of these things that you don't want to believe exist in your community. You don't want to think they're out there. Mm-hmm. But there is somebody in law enforcement, at the DA's office, and all these different task forces out there pushing really hard to make sure those things never rise up to the level where you see it as often, right? Trying to make sure that the wrongdoers out there, these evildoers, are being held accountable.
And we're going to take a break in a moment here and then delve into some of the issues of the day. But let's get personal for a moment. Talk a little bit about your personal side. You are married. You got a couple adorable children. You're an elder millennial as well, born in 81, if I could be specific for you.
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up.
I always have.
Elder
you know
statesman.
That. Yes, the elder
generation.
Statesman of the millennials in Colorado, one of them, yes.
Appreciate that. Yeah. It's actually my son's 8th birthday today.
Oh, well, thanks for coming here tonight on his 8th birthday. Happy birthday to him.
Yeah, thank you. We had a great morning, great day. My daughter, it's also her half birthday, so she is 18 months younger, so she turned 6 and a half today. We got to celebrate that a little bit for her,
too. You know, it's funny. My brother's birthday is February 1st, and my half birthday is February 2nd.
Yeah.
So I always like to say that and try to take a little credit. In fact, I may have done so earlier this month, so.
Well, you know that half birthday is really, really important to kids that age,
yes,
right?
It is, exactly.
Yeah. You'll appreciate this a little bit. So one of the things in my son, turning 8, he remembered this. I told him a few years ago, you know, when something, you know, the store costs like $9.99, I want to get this action figure. It's like $9.99. He's like, well, how much do I have to pay? Okay, you pay $9.99 right now. And then he sees that it rings up and it's like $10.50 or $11, right?
Ah.
And he's like, why does it cost that? I said, well, that's tax. Do I pay the taxes? No. When you're 8, you'll start paying tax. And he has remembered this for like 2 years.
Good for you, Dad. Covering the tax until he turns 8.
Yeah. Yeah. He's lucky, right? But no, now he's a big boy. He's got to pay for that himself.
Is there a certain period of time, perhaps, that you can work and somebody else covers the taxes of your income? I think that would be a great idea if
it's
possible.
Be nice.
You know,
yeah.
At least for the first few years that you're working. Oh, that's just wonderful. You got to teach those kinds of principles. And then suddenly it's, whoa, now I have to pay taxes. Plant that seed.
Yep.
So as a father, what does that do for you in your role where you're in a prosecutor's position? And understanding the role of law enforcement, whether that is those who are the police and, of course, those who are doing the prosecution on your end, especially when we're talking oftentimes about life and death situations.
Sure. Well, I think one of the things for me, it makes a lot of things a lot more personal in the sense that, look, I've got children who are impacted by the policies of police, by the policies of how criminal justice works in our community. I have kids that are going to public schools, so I'm concerned about how safety is being run in those places and then how the DA's office is handling things that come out of places like schools. So obviously it's something I think about as a parent. I think anybody would. There's also the tough side to it because you see on occasion where, you know, victims of crimes and cases I prosecuted are around the ages of my kids, and those are always tough things to think about, but it also makes you motivated to understand that, you know, the parents of these kids who have been victimized, they want justice, they need justice, and to be there for them.
Again, John Kellner is here in studio, Republican candidate for the district attorney post in JD 18, Arapahoe, Douglas, Elbert, and Lincoln counties. By the way, before we go to break, what's your website so people can learn more about you?
Yeah, thanks, Jimmy. www.johnkellner.com. It's JohnKellner.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll start diving into some of the key issues that are prevalent today in the DA's office here on the Jimmy Sengenberger Show, News Talk 710 KNUS.
Jimmy Sengenberger, News Talk 710 KNUS. Save me.
Coming back on the Jimmy Sengenberger Show, News Talk 710 KNUS, little Danielle Nicole with special guest guitarist Kenny Wayne Shepherd. As we continue on the program, John Kellner joining us in studio, candidate for JD 18, district attorney. What kind of music do you like, John?
Buddy, I like what you're playing right here. This is good.
Good, yeah. Good. I like.
You definitely do have
like
the best bumper music. Yeah.
I like a candidate who acknowledges the best bumper music known to man and is enjoying it.
Well, you say it enough, but it's true. All right, so that's good. I like country music mostly. You know, a little bit of original Dolly Parton, Johnny Cash kind of stuff. But
sure.
Yeah.
But you got a little bit of blues soul in there, too, if you like a little Danielle Nicole and Kenny Wayne Shepherd. All right, so I actually want to ask you a question because there's a lot of talk now about how large, and you were talking about this in the break, too, the 18th Judicial District is, because you've got Arapahoe County, large population, Douglas County, Elbert County, Lincoln counties, and there's a lot of talk now about possibly breaking it up at some point, maybe in the near future that might happen. What are you hearing in that regard, and what is your sense for the size and scope, especially as a candidate who actually has to go around all four of those counties, and that's a pretty heavy task.
Yeah, it's a lot of ground to cover. I mean, we have over a million people in this jurisdiction. It's absolutely enormous. So, you know, just think about that compared to Denver, you know, 750,000 plus, that sort of range of people. You know, the 18th is massive. And so, as you mentioned, I mean, there is a bill that's floating around right now in the legislature to actually break it up, starting in the 2024 election, so it wouldn't impact my election in 2020, but starting in 2024, if it passes and becomes law, there would be an election where the 18th itself would just be Arapahoe, and then the new judicial district, the 23rd, would be Douglas, Elbert, and Lincoln County. It would split off, it'd become its own jurisdiction, and the 2024 election, they'd pick their own DA, who would start in January of 2025. So, long way off, but if you think about it, I mean, the jurisdiction itself has been together for 55 plus years or so. So it's a lot to unwind. I mean, it's like taking a massive company or corporation and then spinning off a subdivision into something else entirely.
Oh, no doubt. It's incredibly entrenched. 55 years, you're saying. And then you think about, too, how fast 4 years has gone since President Trump was running for his first campaign, and then time flies right on by and we get to this point, or 4 years since George Brockler was last running for re-election. It is remarkable how fast time flies, so it'll be here before we know it.
I mean,
do you think that's a wise idea, a breakup at some point, or is that something you want to look into more? I mean, what are your thoughts on that? Having worked for 8 years almost in the in JD 18.
Well, I think there's pros and cons. I mean, any discussion about breaking up the jurisdiction, if it's based purely on money and finances, you know, I'm not necessarily in favor of that. If it's about getting better, potentially better sort of criminal justice or public safety outcomes, then I think that's a conversation that we could all have. And that's the debate they're having right now in the legislature. It looks like it's probably going to pass. And I think one of the important things for me looking forward to be the next DA is, you know, what is that going to look like trying to break off in a way that's fair and equitable to all the people that work there and make sure that we don't have a negative impact on public safety for the years as you're trying to basically break it off to make sure.
You would be overseeing that transition. It's a big responsibility. And that on top of the other aspects of the job of being DA.
Yeah, it would be a big deal. And I think it's important to have somebody in the office who would be overseeing that, who's actually been in the office, knows what we do right now, and then can actually help break it off in a way that's going to be sort of fair and equitable, in a way that's going to make sure, you know, nobody's shorted in the public safety aspect.
Talking with John Kellner here in studio, candidate for the 18th Judicial District Attorney. We've got a little over a minute here. When we come back, we'll talk more about some of the criminal justice issues and so forth, but I'm curious, just to set things up, for delving into topics, what are you hearing as you're talking with people on the campaign trail? What issues matter?
What are they concerned about? Yeah. Well, you know, because the district's so big, I mean, it depends on where you're going. I think right now there's a lot of talk, of course, about gun violence. There's a lot of juvenile violence in Aurora that we need to get a handle on.
Gang violence, yeah.
Gang violence, without a doubt, has continued to creep back up. And that's that part of town more so. You know, other parts, I'd say in Douglas County, Elbert, we've got some issues to deal with in terms that I hear about. Black market marijuana, you know, grows inside of suburban communities, and what the criminal element that brings in gets people really, really nervous and upset. And of course, always hearing about school safety and people's concerns about that.
Yeah, well, the school safety issues, that's for darn sure, especially. I mean, we've been the focal point for far too much. And
right.
So we're going to take a break. And when we come back in the next segment, we'll talk a little bit about criminal justice issues. You've been testifying before the state legislature, particularly on Senate Bill 88, one particular piece of legislation that we will dive into, as well as what to do in some of these other areas of concern of people all throughout the 18th Judicial District. Again, that includes Arapahoe, Douglas, Elbert, and Lincoln counties. John Kellner, in studio, Republican candidate for that position of DA to replace George Brockler this November. Stay with us. Jimmy Sangenberger Show, News Talk 710 KNUS.
Jimmy Sangenberger, News Talk 710 KNUS.
I just had to let it breathe to get a little guitar solo from the great late Stevie Ray Vaughan. And John Kellner here can see a little air guitar on the part of yours truly. See?
Yeah,
see
true.
What the music does to me? Gets me in the mood, gets me enthused. Not that having you in studio would be a bore, of course, John Kellner, but it just adds a little bit of something special to the evening. John Kellner is Republican candidate for the 18th Judicial District Attorney, joining us here in studio, Arapahoe, Douglas, Elbert, Lincoln counties. Okay, let's get to substantive issues here. Start on criminal justice reform and various criminal justice related issues. There's one piece of legislation that you have just testified on in the last couple of weeks, in fact, Senate Bill 88, which would close some loopholes in order to stop witness interference. What's going on there?
Yeah, that's a really good bill just passed out of the Senate. And basically what it does is it closes a loophole that right now allows people in the law, let's say a criminal's charged with a crime that there's a witness to that he does not want to have show up in court. All right, so something terrible could happen here. That person could reach out to the witness and say, hey, don't show up. Okay, that's an interference, right? Or they could say, if you don't show up, I'll hurt you in some way. Or worst case scenario, we've seen this happen, unfortunately, terribly. You know, a witness is killed to prevent them from testifying. So what do you think should happen? Should that criminal benefit from that wrongdoing? Of course not, right? Of course not. But what happens right now under the law that we have is we do not have a way to admit the witness's statements who's being prevented from testifying in court. And it's interesting because there's 43 states out there that have a rule or a statute that allows the government to bring in those witnesses' statements because they've been prevented from showing up in court by the wrongdoing of someone else. 43 other states and the federal government. The federal government passed this rule back in 1997 after a witness killing case because they recognize we cannot allow people to subvert the criminal justice system to manipulate it to to try and keep evidence out of court and then benefit in some way from it. So I'm really, really pleased to see that this bill is moving forward, heading over to the House now, and we'll see where it goes.
What was the vote in the Senate?
Well, it passed out of committee unanimously. Senator Rhonda Fields is a sponsor. She's a true champion, I think, for victims and, you know, brings forward a lot of great legislation. So when she brought this forward, I was extremely pleased to see that she was on board with it. It passed unanimously.
In the full Senate, too.
Yep.
Unanimously in committee, unanimously in the full Senate. Was it your testimony that won them over?
Yeah, of course.
No, it is so important. I mean, you want to make sure that people feel free to come forward and they don't feel intimidated by that.
And this is just common sense to fill this gap. And again, as I said, so many other states have already done it. And we recognize in the state of Colorado that if you do that, you lose what's called your Sixth Amendment right to confront that witness. I mean, if you prevent somebody from showing up, you can't then confront them as well. So United States Supreme Court jurisprudence and Colorado case law says that same thing. But then just we didn't have a way to bring it into court. So here's hoping we get over the finish line with this.
What other criminal justice issues are before the state legislature that are catching your attention, John Kellner?
You know, there's a bill that's it's being tweaked right now from what I understand, but it's getting some pretty negative reactions from the criminal justice crowd, at least prosecutors and even judges. And it's this 72-hour grace period bill for failing to appear in court. So let me just ask you this, Jimmy. I mean, if you had to show up in court, and I'm not saying you did, I didn't look this up or anything, but Valentine's Day, just so February 14th, Friday, you were supposed to show up in court at 8:30 and you didn't. What do you think should happen?
Well, at all? I mean, I think it should depend on the case based on what the judge views of the situation, especially if it's somebody that you really should have a warrant for their arrest because they needed to show they might be a threat to other people, for example.
So what you said there, I think, hits the nail on the head, which is it really depends on the case. And what we have right now is a system where if somebody doesn't show up in court, let's say it's on a felony, so already a serious case. Somebody doesn't show up to court on a felony, the judge has the opportunity to say, okay, am I going to issue a bench warrant? Basically, a warrant for this person's arrest because they didn't show up in court when they were supposed to. They could have called my clerk. They could have, their lawyer could have come. Somebody could have told me, hey, Jimmy was in the hospital. He couldn't make it to court today. Nobody showed up. No information. The judge can say, okay, this person failed to appear. I'm going to issue a warrant for their arrest. Because they were supposed to be here. They knew they were supposed to be here.
In fact,
they didn't come.
I was at jury duty once a few years ago.
Yeah.
And I didn't have to stay. They let us go. Otherwise, I would have had to because the guy didn't show up. And so a warrant was issued for his arrest.
Well, this is perfect then. So the bill that's being run right now would say that you get a 72-hour grace period where a judge cannot issue an arrest warrant. So 72 hours before, in excluding holidays and weekends. So, for example, I'm just thinking about how this would work. On the Friday before a trial starts on Monday, we all get together. There's probably four or five cases set to go to trial that Monday. The judge has a stacked docket. They get together and they decide, okay, which case is going to go? Which one is closest on their speedy trial has to go or it might get dismissed. So that one case is going to go. Let's say it's the case of Jimmy and it's starting on Monday, okay? And
there is no case of Jimmy, folks. Let me just assure you, but go on, please.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's pick a different name then, okay? Pick a name.
Jimmy's fine.
Okay.
Let's say Jimmy with an IE, not Jimmy with a Y. Let's
just
do that. Yes,
that guy is very dangerous. So, you know, Monday rolls around. 100 jurors have been called in. They show up on their jury summons doing their civic duty. You got the attorneys, you got a judge, you got a bailiff, you got a courtroom full of prospective jurors, and Jimmy doesn't show up. Guess what happens? All those jurors who took a day off, who got child care to cover for their kids that day because they otherwise would have been at home, they're all sent home. And normally, you know, there would be an arrest warrant issued that morning to bring the defendant into court. And that would not be able to happen. So theoretically, and no consequence, mind you. So you show up the next day, Tuesday, and you say, hey, well, I'm so sorry. I thought it was today. You know, I didn't realize it was Monday. My bad. No consequence to everybody who has already been inconvenienced. The other defendants who might have wanted their day in court don't get it either. And you could keep doing this over and over and over again. You could draw a case out that should be start to finish 6 months. It could be years. There is literally no consequence to stop somebody from continuing to do this. And I'm thinking
the next day, or let's say you wait your full 72 hours, that's multiple juries that had to come and then be sent home.
Well, it could be. So, and
backlogs.
It would destroy efficiency in the criminal justice system. But on top of that, think about it. If you're in a trial, okay, and a defendant is, let's say, you're expecting a verdict. They're waiting on the verdict, and it's Friday morning. Everybody shows up to court, but the defendant's not there. Okay, and it could be a serious case. And you know what? That defendant might be heading for Mexico, might be leaving the country, and you can't even issue a bench warrant, not Friday, not Saturday, not Sunday or Monday or Tuesday, not until Wednesday. All right, and that's the sort of thing that happens when you have this sort of one-size-fits-all legislation that takes judgment away from a judge. You know, we hope that a judge has the ability to make these decisions knowing the facts of the case and come up with a good decision, right?
Unfortunately, I could see that passing. And it's truly unfortunate. It doesn't make any sense to me that that would be the case. But
so many things trying to fix.
Well, exactly. And so many things going on in the legislature don't make sense to me. That's for darn sure. Again, we're talking with John Kellner here in studio, who's Republican candidate for the 18th Judicial District Attorney post. George Brockler is term limited. So John is the guy we need to go step into the role come January of 2021. And I want to shift gears here on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show to an issue that really is of import to many in our audience, which is the red flag law. And this is something people are understandably concerned about. I agree with those who are critical who say it never should have passed, that it is a fundamental violation of our natural right to keep and bear arms, and that we should be focusing more on keeping people away from firearms than saying, oh, we're just going to go ahead and through this process they set up, take firearms away from those individuals. Particularly, I think we should be focusing on the 72-hour mental health hold and so forth. But you're running for district attorney. This is something that could come up at some point. I hear that there is actually a case in the in Lincoln County that recently a judge denied a temporary petition, and Lincoln County is part of the 18th Judicial District. So what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, so a couple things. Actually, many things.
I'm got sure 5 minutes. Like you.
Okay, we'll do our best here. You know, one of the things about this law is it really doesn't apply in many ways to what the DA does. So first thing you got to think about is it's in a civil case. So the district attorney, while I might know about what's going on in these offices and in our jurisdiction, we're not the ones who are applying for these extreme risk protection orders. It's brought in the civil case, and it's actually a civil attorney for the county who's reviewing them beforehand. The only way that changes is if law enforcement brings it and then they are asking for a search warrant. So by law, the DA has a role if asked to review search warrants, and we, of course, always do that. But I share everybody's concern here about the infringement on civil liberties. I mean, in the way that this thing was done, I think it is a problem that the nexus between extreme mental illness and access to weapons, whether they be knives or guns, but guns especially, I mean, we're all concerned about that in the law enforcement community, but what we need is some kind of legal tool that's finely tuned, like a scalpel, to deal with this issue and then really address it with things that are failing us in the 72-hour mental health hold and actually having resources to deal with it as opposed to what this bill did. So, and there's a thing, there's a lot of things out there that concern me about it. You know, you think about just the title, right? Extreme Risk Protection Order. Right. Okay, what's an extreme risk? It's not in the bill. I mean, you're not going to know. It doesn't define it anywhere in there. I think it says significant risk is what the actual standard is. You know, there's a part in there where we've got, you know, sort of a broad class of people that can bring it forward. And I think that's concerning the way it was drafted. You know, it's not just law enforcement who might be able to start something like this. It's family. It's people that maybe somebody had a one-night stand with a long time ago. It's broad.
There are a lot of different ways in which you can claim to fall under that. Yeah. And I mean, or you might lie about it. For example, that case in Larimer County of the woman who went after a police officer using the red flag law and falsely claimed that they had a child in common. Now, thankfully, it worked out for the police officer and she's got legal issues now. But the mere fact that that can happen leads to many questions about the prospects for abuse. And so
I agree with that completely. And I'm very keen to watch and see what happens with that case as it progresses up north.
Now, talk to us a little bit about school safety in your perspective. I mean, as you know, George Brockler's dealt with far too much, whether it's school safety or a movie theater or what have you, where we've had a lot of these shootings that have just devastated our communities. What are your thoughts on that from the DA's perspective?
Yeah, and when you say devastated the community, that is exactly right, because it's not just the kids in the school that are directly affected. It's everybody in their community outside of it. It's kids that maybe were in a different part of the school. It spreads to everyone, and it just adds to this, you know, stress of your daily life in an environment where we should not, you know, worry about our kids in that way. And you know, maybe we didn't years and years ago, but now we have to. So of course there's the STEM shooting, and you know, that case is ongoing, so I'm not really going to talk about that much, but you know, we saw the Arapahoe High School shooting, you know, years ago as well. And I think one of the important things that the DA needs to do is we need to get more involved in the threat assessment process. And this is something that was borne out in the report after the Arapahoe High School shooting. Was there were, of course, warning signs. And I think all the studies have shown so far that in most of these situations where you've got mass shooting or attempted mass shooting, there are warning signs. It's not just buying a gun, it's people know afterwards, oh yeah, I could have told you that was going to be him that did that. And, you know, he had told people about his plans or things like that. So there's a threat assessment process that happens in schools. And typically speaking, the DA is not part of that. And we bring something to the table when you're looking at, okay, is this a criminal act where perhaps this young person needs to be supervised in a way that we can in the criminal justice system? Mm-hmm. Versus making a decision to not even have that as an option, where you might have the increased supervision that could keep people safe. And that was one of the things that failed in Arapahoe that stuck with me in the years since that happened, was if we had been involved earlier, could we have done something?
Mm-hmm. John Kellner is joining us here in studio again, Republican candidate for 18th Judicial District Attorney. We're going to take a quick break here on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show, and we will wrap up with some final thoughts from John here on News Talk 710 KNUS.
Jimmy Sangenberger, News Talk 710 KNUS.
Wrapping up and winding down the Jimmy Sangenberger Show on this Saturday, February 15th. Thanks for joining us, being a part of the program. We've been spending this hour with John Kellner, running for the 18th Judicial District Attorney post that will by law be vacated by George Brockler at the end of this year, or going in the beginning of January, technically. And John is the Republican candidate. All right. Let's talk 2020 electoral prospects. What's the money situation looking like here? There's a lot of money coming in from outside.
Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned that. The money coming in from out of state, or from sort of dark money groups, as some people like to say. You know, we saw that in 2016 in Pete Weir's race in Jefferson County, where he faced in a reelection campaign. And this is a guy who's been a public servant for a long time, a really well-respected DA in our community. And there was $1.3 or $1.4 million brought in against him by a district attorney. I mean, these are races that typically see around $100,000 being raised from either side. So to see this huge sort of cash infusion against him, and you know, frankly, that's something that he was able to fight off and stave off and actually, you know, get his next term. But around the rest of the country, it wasn't always the same. I mean, you saw other people get large infusions of cash, whether it's the Philadelphia DA or the DA in San Francisco. some of these folks being supported by the same PAC, I think, that was dropping money in his race in 2016 in Pete Weir's race. So I think that's a reality that we have to face, that there are very motivated groups out there trying to elect people that may not have the experience or the interest in the community at heart, but they've got an agenda they're trying to drive forward.
It really is the case that people often use George Soros as some sort of bogeyman, but it actually is the case that George Soros is one of the lead financiers of these left-wing groups that are targeting district attorneys races and trying to put in people like who might be the Democratic nominee, one of the candidates running the Democratic side, no experience relevant to any of this of what we would expect from a district attorney.
It's this idea that, if we can change the district attorney, maybe we can bring in somebody who, let's say there's a law on the books we don't like. Mm-hmm. Well, the DA is just going to decide we're not going to enforce that, or I'm just going to use my prosecutorial discretion to ignore the things that I don't like on the books. And that's not respecting the rule of law. That's not what makes our country great.
John Kellner, we've got a ways to go until we get to October, when we have all the ballots going out for November election and everything. But even so, what's your pitch to people who are listening right now to support you, to check you out? Where can they go to learn more? Tell us.
Well, first of all, go to my website, www.johnkellner.com. That's JohnKellner.com. Would absolutely love your support if you want to sign up for the listserv. We'll send out some emails. We'll get you involved and let you know what's going on with the campaign. But listen, when it comes to looking for somebody to elect as district attorney, I think people want someone who respects the rule of law, who's going to do the right thing for the right reasons at the right time. Mm. My background, just the family I grew up in, the experiences I had as I was coming up overseas in a lot of my young childhood. I remember living in Chile in South America after General Pinochet had been basically kicked out of there, a brutal dictator, and he had come to power after a socialist regime was basically taken out. And what you see in that place is the loss of respect for rule of law, and I saw that in Afghanistan as well. And what I know about our country is that respect for the rule of law is what makes it great, and that's what I'm going to bring.
It is one of the key components to it keeps things stable, keeps us going in the right direction. Speaking of rule of law, I hope to see you next Sunday at the Law Enforcement Appreciation Day.
I'll plan to be there, buddy. Yeah.
At Douglas County Fairgrounds, February 23rd, that's Sunday, 3 to 6. Some point during that time, John Kellner will drop by. You can meet him. You'll see him around other events, too. Stand-up guy, class act. I appreciate it. Thanks for joining us, and best of luck to you. We'll have you back.
Thanks, Jimmy. Appreciate it.
All right, that is it for us today. Have a great rest of weekend, and may God bless America.
News Talk 710, KNUS.